This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about sustainability and green ICT in CW 26 and 27. Frenis supports ICT enterprises in the form of delivering precise ICT market and pricing intelligence that analyst subscriptions and existing databases cannot provide. You can find more info in the description.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
So what if I told you that asking ChatGPT to check a simple network route uses about as much computational energy as, say, chartering a 747 to go pick up your weekly groceries?
Yeah, that 747 analogy is it's pretty spot on for what we're looking at today.
Right. Welcome to the deep dive, everyone. Today we are cutting through all those glossy PR pledges to look at the very real, very urgent sustainability and green ICT trends surfacing across the industry.
Exactly, because if you're building or investing in tech, you hear corporate net zero promises absolutely everywhere. But we want to look at the measurable reality. Things like the massive physical footprint of AI, the brutal physics of data center cooling, and how green coding is quietly merging with financial operations.
That is our mission today. So let's just start with how the conversation around artificial intelligence has completely matured. I mean, a year ago, everyone was arguing over whether AI was inherently good or bad for humanity.
Right. And now it is strictly an accounting and governance problem.
Yeah.
We've basically stopped philosophizing and, you know, started measuring.
Which is a huge shift.
It really is. Anna Lerner Nesbitt recently highlighted some vital research by Jennifer Turlick, and the core takeaway there is pretty sobering. Right now, the climate harms caused by AI are highly measurable and immediate.
But the benefits aren't.
Exactly. The climate benefits remain largely speculative at this point. It is a deficit from day one.
Which means it's definitely not sustainable by default. Turlick suggests that every single time a business decides to use an AI model, they need to calculate the net climate impact.
Right. Literally subtracting the speculative climate benefits from the guaranteed climate harms.
But the underlying problem there is that the industry is dramatically undercounting those harms to begin with, right?
Oh, vastly undercounting them. Ludovic Subran and Patrick H. both pointed to this recent data from Alliance Research. It shows that global data center emissions are actually 57% higher than the International Energy Agency's official estimates.
I saw that figure and my jaw just dropped. I mean, yeah. 57% is not a rounding error. How does the industry have a blind spot that massive?
Well, it all comes down to where you draw the boundary on your spreadsheet. Historically, the industry only measured Scope 2 emissions.
Meaning just the operational power.
Yeah, the actual electricity sucked out of the wall when the servers are running. But Alliance Research expanded that boundary to include the full value chain, especially the embodied carbon.
Oh, right. So the emissions generated from mining the silicon, manufacturing the actual hardware.
Pouring the concrete for the facilities, forging the steel racks, all of it.
Wow. So if you ignore the building and the box, you're missing more than half the picture.
Exactly.
But okay, let me play devil's advocate here for a second, because Bernhard Lorentz just published a book called Green AI.
Right, I'm familiar with that one.
And his argument is that AI is the ultimate optimization engine. Like, if we unleash it on smart grids or global shipping logistics, he estimates it could reduce global emissions by 1.4 gigatons.
That's a huge number.
Right. That would easily wipe out its own infrastructure footprint. You spend a little electricity to save an ocean of oil, basically.
And Lorentz makes a really powerful case for that potential, absolutely. But potential doesn't automatically equal reality.
Yeah. Fair point.
An AI model optimizing a logistics route doesn't automatically decommission a coal plant, you know. To actually materialize those net savings, an organization needs ruthless governance.
Which brings us to Aparna Kay, right? She brought this up recently.
Yes, she argued that carbon intensity has to become a board-level, non-functional requirement.
Let's break that down for the listener really quick. A functional requirement is like the app needs to process a payment. A non-functional requirement is usually about speed or security, like it must process the payment in under 1 second safely.
Right. And Aparna is saying carbon efficiency needs to be the third pillar right there alongside them.
It has to be mandated.
Exactly. If a board signs off on a brilliant new product roadmap, but doesn't demand an auditable software carbon intensity score alongside it, the company's net zero pledge is just an illusion. It never actually reaches the engineers building the thing.
Which puts us on a massive collision course. Because if boards actually start mandating these limits, the engineers have to confront the physical reality of where this tech lives.
Right, these models aren't magically floating in a cloud somewhere.
No, they're sitting inside massive industrial buildings connected to stressed power grids. The physical constraints, you know, energy, water, and geography, those are becoming the defining bottlenecks for the whole sector.
You're seeing intense friction between the energy grids required to power these chips and the water supplies required to keep them from literally melting.
And suddenly, geography is the most important tech decision you can make. Shabab Kohi proved this beautifully.
Oh, with his open source tool, right?
Yes. He built a tool to measure application energy and emissions. When he ran the numbers, he found that simply taking a workload and deploying it in a data center in Stockholm instead of Tokyo resulted in a 98% reduction in carbon emissions.
That is just wild. 98%.
And it's the exact same code, the exact same processing time. But the underlying grid in Sweden is heavily powered by hydro and nuclear, whereas Tokyo relies heavily on fossil fuels.
So that figure really proves that choosing your availability zone is a high-leverage climate decision. But what happens when those green grids simply run out of capacity?
That's the real issue, isn't it?
Yeah. Robert Mueller highlighted the situation unfolding in Texas right now. The grid operators there are essentially telling data center developers, sure, you can build here, but we can't power you for years. Bring your own electricity.
Wait, how do you just bring your own power to a hyperscale data center? Are they building their own nuclear plants?
Eventually, maybe. But right now, it's sparking this huge boom in behind-the-meter generation. Facilities are bypassing the grid entirely by installing massive on-site gas turbines.
Like the solid oxide fuel cells.
Exactly, like those manufactured by Bloom Energy. They are securing their own baseload power because they simply cannot afford to wait for public utility upgrades.
But even if you generate your own power, you still have to deal with the heat. Louis Tosi laid out the brutal engineering trade-off between power and water when it comes to cooling these server farms.
It's a fascinating dilemma.
It really is. If you use an air-cooled chiller, you need a tremendous amount of electricity to run those massive fans, but you use almost zero water.
Right. And if you switch to a water-cooled chiller,
it's vastly more energy efficient, but it evaporates roughly 22,000 cubic meters of water every single year.
So you're basically forced to pick your poison based on local scarcity. Like, is the local community more strapped for electricity or for drinking water?
Exactly. And sometimes public perception forces the absolutely wrong choice. Praful Kher shared this wild story about a Google facility down in Chile.
Oh, I saw this one.
There was intense activist pressure protesting the data center's water usage, which was apparently based on some exaggerated math. So Google caved and switched the facility's design from water cooling to air cooling.
Let me guess the outcome. The local grid had to supply way more power.
Much worse than that. By switching to air cooling in that specific climate, the energy demands completely skyrocketed. That meant the local power plants had to burn significantly more fuel.
Oh no.
Yeah, it created a massive spike in CO2 and local air pollution. The activists celebrated a win on water conservation, but the holistic climate impact was a total disaster.
That really underscores the danger of single metric optimization.
Yeah.
You squeeze the balloon in one place and it pops somewhere else entirely.
Right.
But, you know, we also can't let the tech giants off the hook here because their holistic metrics aren't looking great either.
James Martin and Vil Nordberg pointed out the stark numbers in Google's latest environmental report.
And what did that show?
Since 2019, their overall emissions have nearly doubled and their water withdrawal has almost tripled.
But wait, Google constantly publishes research showing how much more efficient their specific AI models are getting. I think they just claimed their median text prompt uses 33 times less energy than it used to.
It's a classic case of Jevons paradox. The rebound effect. Yes, the individual prompt is drastically more efficient, but because it's cheaper and faster, we are integrating it into absolutely everything.
So the sheer volume of usage scales up exponentially.
Exactly, and that completely wipes out the efficiency gains. This is exactly why the debate over what constitutes greenwashing is so fierce right now. So, if hyperscalers are hitting a wall with grid capacity and cooling them is this constant environmental trade-off, the industry is being forced to rethink the physical building itself, right? We are moving from just building data centers to practicing industrial symbiosis.
Industrial symbiosis is the perfect term for it. It's about looking at a data center not as a parasite on the city grid, but as a potential donor. Emanuela Grandi shared a brilliant case study out of Milan.
This is the Equinix partnership, correct?
Yeah, Equinix partnered with the local energy company, A2A. Instead of just using chillers to vent all that server heat uselessly into the atmosphere, they're actually capturing it.
And they pump it directly into the city's district heating network.
Exactly. Using large-scale heat pumps, they redirect that thermal waste to heat over 21,000 homes.
Wow.
Yeah, it avoids over 345,000 tons of CO2 annually. The data center goes from being a massive liability to an active thermal contributor to the city's infrastructure.
That is such a smart way to solve the operational waste. But what about the embodied carbon we talked about earlier, the concrete and steel?
Well, Carl Rave has been tracking the rising interest in wooden data centers.
Wooden data centers, really?
Yeah. Architects are turning to cross-laminated timber, or CLT. By swapping out traditional concrete and steel for engineered wood, they can radically slash the upfront carbon footprint of the building itself.
That's incredible.
And that mindset is trickling down to the hardware life cycle, too. Daniel Buckley pointed out that the concept of circular IT is finally maturing. It used to just mean ethical disposal, like making sure a server didn't end up in a landfill.
Right. And now?
Now it's about strategic value creation.
Meaning they are actually refurbishing and redeploying these chips instead of just shredding them.
Yes, exactly. Through secure data erasure and refurbishment, organizations are realizing that turning e-waste back into functional technology provides measurable environmental impact. And, you know, it actually looks fantastic on an ESG report.
Okay, so we've got wooden buildings, recycled heat, and refurbished servers. But at the end of the day, the hardware is just the vessel. The real engine driving this massive energy consumption is the software running inside those servers. And this brings us to one of the most exciting shifts happening right now. Green software is aggressively converging with FinOps.
This is where the environmental mandate finally gets some financial teeth. Vijay Zende phrased it perfectly. He said a bloated cloud bill is essentially a carbon bill in disguise.
That framing makes so much sense. If you have an idle microservice spinning in AWS, it's burning your quarterly budget, but it's also quite literally burning coal.
The incentives are finally aligned. When a FinOps team right-sizes an organization's cloud infrastructure to save money, they inadvertently shrink the carbon footprint. Cloud cost optimization and green computing are becoming the exact same discipline.
Naveen Balani introduced a concept that illustrates this perfectly, which he calls forever data.
Oh, this is a great concept.
Yeah, he was analyzing how companies manage routine AI upgrades. Let's say a dev team upgrades their API to a newer, better embedding model. It sounds completely harmless.
But nobody puts delete the old data on the deployment checklist, do they?
Nope. So these massive outdated data sets just sit there in cloud storage forever, quietly drawing power and racking up hidden storage costs.
It's the digital equivalent of paying rent on an empty warehouse and just leaving all the lights on.
Yeah.
And the inefficiency isn't just in storage, it's in how we compute. You brought up that 747 analogy earlier.
Oh, yes. From the Green I.O. Munich conference.
Right. From a fascinating discussion, Edward Delharu started there.
He was analyzing modern network automation, right? He saw engineers taking a very simple query, like just checking a BGP session, which is essentially just looking at the internet's basic postal routing.
And they were sending that query to a massive hyperscaler large language model. They were firing up hundreds of billions of parameters, spinning up massive GPUs just to parse a highly structured binary networking task.
Which is insane. The daughter pointed out that if you just route that task to an optimized on-prem small language model, an SLM, it accomplishes the exact same thing using fractions of a watt.
You really have to right-size the intelligence to the task.
And it goes even deeper than the model size. Suud Aslan shared research showing that the underlying programming language you type in makes a staggering difference.
Yeah, her team tested a random forest machine learning model, right?
Yes. Just by writing it in the R programming language instead of Python and switching the precision of the numbers from float 64 down to float 32, they cut the model's energy consumption by 75%.
That's a massive reduction for just tweaking a few lines of code. And for the listener who isn't writing code every day, it really helps to understand why that works.
Walk us through it.
Well, float 64 means the computer is using 64 bits of memory to store incredibly precise decimal numbers. By dropping it to float 32, you instantly have the memory bandwidth and the processor strain.
And the kicker is, For most practical applications, the loss in accuracy is completely unnoticeable.
Exactly.
So hearing all this about idle compute and processor strain, my brain immediately jumps to an architectural solution. If idle servers are the enemy, shouldn't we just make everything serverless?
The serverless debate.
Right, because a serverless architecture scales down to absolute zero when no one is using the app. Doesn't that magically solve the energy problem?
It's a very logical hypothesis, and hyperscalers certainly market serverless computing as the ultimate efficiency hack. But Wilco Burggraf provided a really sharp warning against treating it as a silver bullet.
What's the catch?
Green software design is incredibly contextual. To give you that instant zero latency experience when your code finally triggers, the cloud provider has to keep massive pools of CPU and memory constantly spinning in the background, ready to allocate at a millisecond's notice.
Oh, I see. So the orchestration overhead is immense.
Exactly. So if your workload requires steady, constant computing, forcing it into a serverless architecture actually creates massive digital waste compared to a traditional optimized server.
So you really have to understand the specific physics of your own workload. But, you know, maybe the ultimate green software principle is much simpler than any of this. Valerius Asalis argued that the most underrated question in all of IT is simply, do we really need to build this feature at all?
In a tech culture obsessed with constant shipping and feature bloat, that is almost a taboo question. But she's totally right. The most sustainable code with a carbon footprint of absolute zero is the code you never write.
Which brings us to the final hurdle today. If green software is this contextual, and if it's so easy for companies to hide behind these market-based ESG reports, how do we actually hold the industry accountable?
The answer we're seeing across the board is a massive push toward rigorous measurement and public standards. You could really feel this shift at the Green I.O. Munich event.
Yeah, leaders like Gail Dewez and Baptiste Paravicini made it very clear. Sustainable computing is graduating from corporate PR to a strict engineering framework.
The era of just raising awareness is over. We are moving into scalable, auditable implementation.
And we're seeing the public sector step up to enforce this, which is huge. Hannah Lipstein recently introduced a new handbook designed entirely for government procurement teams.
Right. It basically trains governments to translate the environmental costs of AI, the water evaporation, the grid intensity, the embodied carbon, into aggressive, actionable questions in their requests for proposals.
That is a massive lever for change. Governments procure billions of dollars of technology. The moment they start rejecting bids because the vendor can't provide an auditable software carbon intensity score, the big tech firms will finally build the transparent measurement tools we've been waiting for.
Exactly. Money talks.
It really does. So before we wrap up today's deep dive, there is one critical piece of advice from Paul Noon that every single person listening needs to internalize. If you are sitting across from a vendor or evaluating your own company's impact, you have to demand location-based emissions figures, not market-based emissions figures.
Yes, this is perhaps the single most important distinction in carbon accounting right now.
Walk us through why that specific gap matters so much.
Well, market-based accounting is an administrative sleight of hand. It allows a company to claim their data center is 100% renewable because they purchased a bunch of solar renewable energy certificates in one country, even while their actual physical servers are plugged into a coal-heavy grid in a completely different country.
That's incredibly misleading.
It is. Location-based emissions, however, measure the absolute physical reality. It tells you exactly how carbon intensive the electricity flowing into that specific building is at that exact hour.
Wow.
Yeah, as Paul Noon warned, the gap between market-based claims and location-based reality is exactly where all the greenwashing hides.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on cloud, digital products and services, artificial intelligence, and ICT and tech insights, health tech, defense tech. Thank you so much for listening. We know your time is valuable, and we appreciate you spending it with us. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you never miss an edition.
And before you go, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, building on a really provocative point raised by Petra Heinderbrock. She was analyzing those throwaway AI-generated visuals we see flooding our LinkedIn feeds every day.
Oh, like the synthetic office chaos ones?
Yeah, the slightly off-cartoon crowds. Generating a single image uses about as much energy as leaving an LED bulb on for 8 minutes.
That's crazy.
It doesn't sound like a lot until you multiply it by the millions of rejected, regenerated, and instantly forgotten prompts happening globally every single day. So what if the future of digital sustainability isn't just about making our server hardware more efficient? What if it's about fundamentally auditing our digital waste? Imagine a future where companies are required to report unjustified computations on their balance sheets, sitting right next to their financial debt. Would that change the way you prompt AI tomorrow?